to Sanskrit? I don't know how that happened. He, just him. Yeah. You see me after, see me after
is
class.
Is there a line between avidya and svarat? That's separate, right? Svarat separate form.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look at it. It'll help you memorize it. I think it's easier. If you, the first section, janmadi asa yataha.
Okay.
That's one section. Then we come to this, anvayad itaratas charateshu abhigya. Abhigya means full conscious, fully conscious. And then anvayad means through others or indirectly. And itarata, directly. Arteshu means in all affairs or for all purposes and all reasons and all subjects. So directly and indirectly conscious of all subjects. Then swarat, fully independent. Then the next one is Tene Brahma Ridaya Adi Kavaye. Brahma here means Vedic knowledge. And Lord Brahma is Adi Kavi, Adi Kavaye, unto the Adi Kavi. You know the word Kavi, like Krishnadas Kavi Raj? Kavi means doctor, to the first doctor. Doctor means learned person. The word doctor in English comes from the Latin word docta, which means learned. So it used to be a title given to learned persons. Then they started to let physicians and people like that call themselves doctors and it went to hell. But it means learned. So the first learned being. Just like Kaviraj also we use for Ayurvedic doctors. The same system is there. Veterinarians and whatever. Doctors now. But it used to be learned. So the first learned being, the first educated being. Why? Because he had Brahma Rida. He had Vedic knowledge implanted in his heart. That's the next section. See, just see what... Huh? What? It's not referring to Brahma as the person. It's referring to Vedic knowledge. The word Brahma means Vedic knowledge. Brahma, the person, is Adi Kaviye.
Oh, I see.
Adi Kavi, the first learned being.
There's no line.
Huh? Yeah, it's not long. It's just short. You see, this is... Just take the word Brahma, just those words, whether it has long A's or short A's, can be all over the place. So one meaning of the word Brahman is Vedic knowledge. That's what it means here. You have to take Prabhupada's word for it. But that's so okay. Muyanti yat surayaha. Here the subject of the senses is the suras, demigods. And muyanti means caused to be bewildered. Then this is very, next part is very compressed. Tejo vadi mridam, which simply means like, jata means like tejo vadi mridam, like fire, air, and fire, water, and earth. Tejo vadi mridam. That's one compound. Tejo vadi, like, there could, even it causes the demigods to be confused. The way one will see water and land and so on, like a mirage. Vinimayo yatra tri sargom risha, and by which the interactions of the tri sarga means the three modes of material nature appear factual. Dindamna swena sada nirasta kuhakam. That describes the Lord's abode. Dhamna, his, here this says, along with all transcendental paraphernalia. Svena, from sva, meaning by his own, again, self-sufficient. Sada means always, forever. And nirasta kuhakam. conspicuous by its absence. Illusion is, nirasta means absent, and there's no illusion. This is about the Lord's abode, which is full of his own paraphernalia, which is self-sufficient, which is eternal, and in which you'll not find any illusion. And satyam param dhimahi, I meditate on that supreme truth. If you try to keep the sense of some of these words in your mind, I find it very hard just to memorize a string of Sanskrit without having some one-on-one correspondence with meanings myself, but other people can. Well, I want to go on here. We won't be able to delve into all of this equally in this purport. The next item that he takes up, you'll notice in the purport now to the text, after discussing the nomenclature of Krishna, that is, commenting on Vasudev, then on page 5 and 6, Prabhupada gives a short history of Srimad Bhagavatam, that it represents the mature experience of transcendental knowledge of Vyasadev. So he tells a little bit about that. And then he goes on in the paragraph beginning generally, a philosophical mind. So here now Prabhupada is also commenting on this janmadasyataha. What is the absolute truth? And it's interesting here, I want you to look at this, because again you see where Prabhupada's original is superior to the edited version. If you look at this, he starts off by saying, generally, a philosophical mind is inquisitive to know what is the origin of all creations. This is a reference, really, to the first sutra of the Brahma Sutra, of Vedanta Sutra. Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now that you are a human being, your business is inquiry into the absolute truth. So he's saying, generally, a philosophical mind is inquisitive to know what is the origin of all creations. He sees at night on the stars, and naturally thinks, what are the stars, how they are situated, who lives there, and so on. Now, that's lost in editing for some reason. It says, at night he sees the stars, and he naturally speculates about its inhabitants. Such inquiries are natural for a man, it says. Now, I don't know why they left all that out. I can't figure it out. Because it struck me as weird. You want to know about the origin of creation, then you look at the stars at night and wonder about who lives there. But here you see in the original what Prabhupada is thinking about. Just the experience of going out. He sees it. At night he gazes up on the sky and sees the stars. And naturally he wonders, what are those stars? How did they get there? Does anyone live there? And so on. You know, just kind of struck with wonder about the creation. That's the sense that Prabhupada wants to convey. All these inquiries are quite natural for a human being because he has developed consciousness, more developed consciousness than the animals. And to answer at once to such sincere inquiries, the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam says that the Lord is the origin of creation. That's the meaning there. So he answers at once, immediately gives an answer, Prabhupada says in the original. First thing, janmadyasyayatumbe. He's first of all, that's what he is. He is not only the creator, but also he's the maintainer of the cosmic situation, and he is the destroyer of them. That's janma, adi, janma, and maintenance, and destruction. The manifested cosmic nature is created at a certain period on the will of the Lord, is maintained for some time, and then it is annihilated by his will, and as such, he is the supreme will behind all these activities. Okay, so that's what he's comment on there. Then Prabhupada gives into an argument, and I just want you to notice in the original that Prabhupada uses the phrase biggest big brain or best brain all throughout this purport, which the editors changed to intelligence. But actually, Prabhupada uses it to some purpose here. And he gives an argument which may seem like the argument for design. This is a favorite old-time argument for the existence of God, which is, crudely put, the existence of a watch implies the existence of a watchmaker. That's the argument for design. It's had a long and controversial history, and of course it's been denied. Because it's an argument for on the basis of an analogy that the things in the material world are like watches. And David Hume and others says, you know, who says so? They're like watches and, you know, so on like that. And but Prabhupada's argument here is a little, it gives a basis for an analogy. It's not just, doesn't just throw an analogy, but it gives a reason why there's an analogy. And this reason is related in the absolute truth. And we can see here, he says, the modern scientist has created a Sputnik. This was written in late 1950s. So that's the Russians had put their Sputnik up. And in India, of course, there's so much Soviet propaganda, so everybody's really aware of it. The modern scientist has created a Sputnik. And by some arrangement or other, the Sputnik is thrown into outer space to fly on for some time at the control of a scientist who is far away from the flying Sputniks. This is great language. I love it, you know. I think it's so much better. Similarly, all the universes with innumerable planets within them are similar to the Sputniks controlled by the best brain of the personality of Godhead. So there it is, the best brain. In the Vedic literatures, it is said that the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, is the chief amongst the living personalities. All living beings, beginning from the first created being, Brahmaji, down to the smallest ant, all of them are individual living beings. And above Brahmaji, there are many other living beings with individual capacities. And the personality of God, it is also a similar living being, as individual as the other living beings. But the Supreme Lord or the Supreme Living Being has the highest brain with the supermost and inconceivable energies of different varieties. If a man's brain can produce a Sputnik, we can very easily imagine that the brains higher than the man can produce similar other wonderful things far superior than the man-made Sputniks. A reasonable person, there he is, the reasonable person. A reasonable person will accept this argument, but there are stubborn obstinates who may not believe in this reasonable statements. But Srila Vyasadeva at once accepts the supreme brain, addressed as the para, param satyam. That's the para there, if you're wondering where that came from. Param satyam. As the para or parameshwara or the supreme personality of Godhead. And that parameshwara is Sri Krishna, is admitted in the Bhagavad Gita and all of the scriptures delivered by Srila Vyasadeva and specifically in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says there is no other para tattva summum bonum than himself. Mata parataran, I always say that wrong. Something happens. Mata, what's the second word? No, parataram. Kinchit asti dhananjaya. There's no truth higher than me. Now, what you see in this is more than it is a kind of argument for the you might say from design, but it, you see, it's a little. If we can understand, he says, he doesn't say because you know there's the planets are like Sputniks, and our Sputniks require a creator so we can understand these other planets. They're like Sputnik, so they require a creator. He doesn't quite do like that. It's a little more subtle. He says, if we can see that these here among these small brains in the material world, there's this Sputnik-making propensity. They have this capacity of making Sputniks and flying them at a remote distance. You see that our brains do that. And there are higher brains than doing that. So what is the difficulty to understand that the greatest brain of all is flying all these universes or planets? That's the way he argues. And so what I'm saying is there is here an argument about the absolute truth that of a microcosmic, macrocosmic relationship. Prabhupada said that you can understand God by studying ourselves. This is this notion, this analogy between living beings, ourselves, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said, and I quote, "We are small samples of God." You can understand God by studying ourselves. He said, we see in this material world that boys have attraction for girls and girls have attractions for boys. Where does that come from? Janmanasigataha. Everything comes from the absolute truth, so we can understand it must be there in Krishna. This is an argument running through this purport. That's really the implicit argument here in this description, that you're seeing the analogy between our small gray brains making little Sputniks because the big brain makes big ones. That's where it comes from. Another one, he says, sometimes we see boys like to play on flutes. Where does this flute playing propensity come from? So, it comes from Krishna. Where did the game of baseball originate? It did not originate in upstate New York. It originated... the first batter was Balaram, and the first pitcher was Dvivida Gorilla, as I recall. There's the origin of baseball. It took a little while to realize the rest of it. There was never a parampara. But anyway, that these things are there in the absolute truth. You can understand God by studying ourselves. So, if you want to this argument. There's arguments there about watchmaker. God is a greater mechanic than the watchmaker. That comes up again. But here, this comes to an end. If you look at the last paragraph of the purport, which doesn't seem to be dealing directly, in the last couple of paragraphs, he turns to a few things that the commentators say. One that Sridhar Swami, Prabhupada, when he wrote this commentary, had in front of him the commentary of the Acharyas. And first he talks about Sridhar Swami and the date of Srimad Bhagavatam, that it's not a late production written by somebody named Vopadev. There's apparently some Mayavadi's claim. And then he turns to this. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology. Adiras. Devoid of all mundane inebriety. The whole material world is moving on the basic principle of sex life. In italics. In the modern setup of human civilization, the sex life is the central point of all activities. Wherever we may turn our face, we see a great prominence on the sex life. Therefore, sex life is not unreal. Its real reality is experienced in the spiritual world. The material sex life is but a perverted reflection of the original fact. The original fact, therefore, is the absolute truth, and as such, the absolute truth cannot be impersonal without any sense in the pure sex life. So here he starts by again, if you see it here, if it's everywhere here, it has to be there. Therefore, it's not unreal. And of course, there's another part of the purport that comes into play here. Not only this idea of as above, so below, but also the other notion that the reality, as Prabhupada says in his original purport, the real reality is there, and the pseudo-reality is here. When he comments on the part about the difference between Maya, what Maya does, Maya makes you think that the reality is here, when in fact it's somewhere else. Yeah.
This copies that we've been given here, is this exactly faithful to the old one? Because here it says, therefore sex life is not unreal, is in italics, but in the one we have today, it's not in italics. And I was wondering if those...
Where does it say that? I'll look at the original. No, I'm sure it's in italic. When this was copied, he tried to copy it exactly what it was, but I'm sure also typos of his own were introduced. No, I'll tell you, just a minute. Well, if the italics was dropped out?
Yeah.
It was originally in boldface. I don't know why he put it in italic. Oh, because the whole thing is in boldface. It was originally in boldface. The whole material world is moving on the basic principles of sex life was in boldface. And therefore, comma, sex life is not unreal.
Is
in bold, yeah.
Okay. That was changed.
Just he put it in italics. And then it was,
Second italics or the prominence given to that second statement is not in the modern.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Its real reality is experienced in the spiritual world. So we'll also, we're a little ahead of ourselves, but this is this notion about what you see here looks real because somehow it has this air of reality that it borrows from the source, which is real. Yeah?
Is there a reflection of this
I don't know. Some people say that. In other words, we have the notion of Krishna's original spiritual form of sex, he says here. And also in the Madhurya Rasa. Now, in Christian mysticism, there's something called bridal mysticism based on the Song of Songs. In which there's a, just that, husband and bride, nothing about parakiya rasas there, in Christian mysticism. Some people make the case that it's the same thing. I don't see how that could be myself. I tend to be pretty skeptical about it, but some people think it is. There have been analogies drawn between the two. No. Why preach Christian scriptures? We have our own. No, not unless you know what you're doing. Yeah. I wouldn't. I don't. So that's Prabhupada's kind of argument here. He says, then he invokes this Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, which is really quite nice there. It's another quick summary of what the absolute truth consists of. Krishna says there to Arjuna, now I'm going to explain to you everything. I'm going to explain to you, he says, everything material and spiritual, or phenomenal and numinous. Everything, spiritual and material. Knowing which, he says, there is nothing further to be known. Now, that when I first read this, I thought, you know, come on. This is a little chapter in Bhagavad Gita. There's lots of things left out. You know, what does he mean, knowing which there's nothing further to be known? But I realized that actually in a very few verses, that's just what Krishna does. In the sense that he spells out the whole of existence. Everything that there is. If you want a technical term for this, the study of what is, comes from a Greek word ontos, which means being, right? Ontology. He gives a complete ontology, complete description of everything that there is, material and spiritual. He he lists his separated material energies. 8 separated material energies. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta calls these solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy, and space. So you know, you can sound more comfortable if you don't want to sound primitive. Solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy, and space. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And that's as far as material science goes. Right there in the first part of the verse, he's taking care of material science. They go up as far, they're from, you know, gross to subtle. Space is more subtle. Space is not a void. Modern science does not believe that space is a void. It's full of actions and reactions. In fact, it bends and curves and twists and all kinds of things, according to what they say. So it may be subtle, but it's there. It's an element. And then he says, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Right away, you're out of their ontology, you know. This is doubted whether these things exist. Is there any such thing as mind? Nobody knows for sure. How can we systematically eliminate it from scientific discourse? So we don't have to talk about mind, but just about behavior of gross observable things. This goes on all the time, because they don't really know if it exists. According to this, it's a subtle material energy. Not just one, but manas, buddhi, ahankara. And that he said, that's my material energy. Then he says, on the other side, there's another energy, which is the jivas, which is not separated, his spiritual energy in the material world, right? So that's the other one, the souls. And what he's saying is, then he says, all created beings have their source in these two natures, right? In other words, everything you see in this world arises from the confluence, the flowing together of these two energies. The spirit souls, one thing, one category, and matter, another category. No way to reduce them to one. There is a way to reduce them to one, but not the way material scientists or speculative philosophers. What do they try to do? It's a big problem. Here I am, I'm conscious, I've got this, you know, awareness, and then there's matter, and there's two things. There's spirit and matter in the world. Philosophers have been aware of it. And the whole thing is, let's only have one thing. It's too, you know, we can't figure out how they go together. So sometimes they have materialism. Let's get rid of the spirit side and say it's all matter. and all varieties of materialism. What is your mind, your thoughts, your feelings, your consciousness? It's an epiphenomena. It's like foam or froth, you know, on the top of, like the fizz on the matter, you know. It's an epiphenomena. Or they go the other way. Some idealism. There is no matter. The material world is unreal. It's just everything is mind. Usually one mind, capital M. That way you get rid of it, you know. Because you got these two things. Krishna also unifies them. I am the source of both of them. Both these things, matter and spirit, they come from, I'm the origin and dissolution of both of them. They come from me and they go back into me. Janmadasayataha. They're going out and they're coming in. And then he says, after that, Mata parataram nanyat kinchin asti. And beyond me, there's nothing more. That's it. So these are matter, spirit, and the origin of both. And that's all that there is. Krishna and Krishna's energies, which here are listed as starts to play rock and roll. But so they say life comes from matter. So Prabhupada says life comes from life. And then he said both matter and life come from life. That's right here in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So that source of everything is the absolute truth. That's Krishna. So that's when Prabhupada mentions that. Now he gives it here. Okay, we looked at the philosophical mind. Then, if we're just going in sequence, if you look at page 7 in the purport, where I left off, he says, therefore the author at once worships the paratattva. Paratattva. Tattva is another word that we use for the absolute truth. You might as well learn this one too. Tattva is a kind of interesting Sanskrit word. The word tat means literally that. And twa, the suffix twa means ness, N-E-S-S. So the literal meaning of tattva is thatness. Or as the Buddhas say, suchness. tattva. But so its use, it means category or principle, reality, absolute truth, and so on. Tattva. There's the pancha tattva, which means more than just the five personalities. Lord Chaitanya's associates is called the pancha tattva. But it's tattva because they each figure embodies a principle. I mean, you can see when the Panchatattva was revealed at Sri Vasanga and they saw Lord Chaitanya standing there with his associates, it suddenly everybody realized what was going on. There's Krishna. There's Lord Chaitanya in the center. That's Krishna. Next to him, Nityananda. His first expansion, Balaram. Next to him, Advaita Acharya. The next expansion, of Mahavishnu. So on Lord Chaitanya's right side, you have Vishnu Tattva. Then on his left side, his internal potency, Gadadhar, and then Srivas, his marginal potency. So there it is, the whole absolute truth. Lord Chaitanya and four associates, and yet they each of them embody and personify a certain aspect of the absolute truth. So you get the Vishnu Tattva, the energetic, and you get the energies, the internal marginal potency, and the expansion and incarnation. So therefore, Tattva, there are five Tattvas or principles that are embodied there. So the absolute truth is also called Paratattva, the highest principle, the highest reality. Sometimes Tattva is used for reality, like that. Therefore, the author at once worships the Paratattva Sri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto. And now, here, Prabhupada goes on to describe that one has to get up to the rasa dance by working through the other things to understand, first of all, how Krishna works in connection with his energies, how great Krishna is, who Krishna is. So then when you come to the area of Krishna's intimate pastimes, you don't mistake it for something mundane. That has to be done. You have to proceed upwards through this. It's the most confidential part of this great literature, because the habit is there, because the 10th canto is the most famous part, especially the chapters dealing with the Rasa Leela, that many places, that's all people ever hear. And it's therefore widely misunderstood. People come and professional reciters recite that in India without people having any kind of knowledge of who Krishna is, or without themselves being free from mundane sex desire. So Prabhupada says, the subject matter is a highly spiritual technology. He uses this word here, technology, which the editors did not carry through with. Spiritual techniques, based on spiritual techniques. And only the liberated persons who have gradually attained to the stage of Paramahamsa, as referred to here and before, can transcendentally relish the worshipable rasa dance. That's referred to before when he mentions the history of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Vyasadeva therefore gives us the chance of gradual development of spiritual realization before one can actually relish the essence of the pastimes of the Lord. He therefore purposely invokes the Gayatri Mantra Dhimahi. The Gayatri Mantra ends with this word Dhimahi. And the second initiation, one is initiated with the Gayatri Mantra, several of them. But Dhimahi means I meditate upon. And that means that if one can chant Gayatri Mantra, one is supposed to be attained a certain level or spiritual platform. So what it means, why it's put here, thus this Gayatri Mantra is meant for the spiritually advanced people. When one has attained success in the matter of chanting the Gayatri Mantra, he can enter into the transcendental position of the Lord. In other words, the internal potency. Doesn't mean you become God, but you come to the platform on which God's activities are carried on. One must therefore acquire Brahminical qualities or be perfectly situated in the quality of goodness of the modes of material nature in order to chant the Gayatri Mantra successfully, and then attain to the stage of transcendentally realizing the Lord, His name, His fame, His qualities, etc. Okay? So that there it is. He's saying that at least one has to come to the platform of mode of goodness. We find in Bhagavad Gita, it's told to us that knowledge depends upon goodness. One wants to develop spiritual knowledge, one has to be in the mode of sattva. Notice the twa is there again, sattva, goodness. So he's saying that at least one is on the mode of goodness and then gradually progresses to the transcendental stage. There will not be any realization of Krishna consciousness unless one is situated begins when one is situated in the material mode of goodness. Passion and ignorance have to go away. It is a spiritual technology, he says, because we learn later on in Bhagavatam, he says that if we regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya, two things, Bhagavata means that, remember I explained to you before about a patronymic, a word derived from or in relationship to. So Bhagavata, we're called Bhagavatas. One name for devotee is Bhagavata, Bhagavan, and that which is in relationship to Bhagavan is called Bhagavata with a long A. Bhagavata. So it says, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. By me, the spiritual technology is Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. By means of, Seva means service and it means worship. Worship of what? Bhagavata. How often? Nitya. What does Nitya mean? Always. At least every day on a regular basis. Bhagavata. What are the Bhagavatas? One is the person. The devotee. By regularly serving the devotee. Prabhupada translates it as the spiritual master. That's the devotee whom you particularly elect to serve. Bhagavata Sevaya. By always serving the spiritual master. And here's the other Bhagavata. It's in neuter, not masculine, because it's a book. Srimad Bhagavata, same word. How do you perform Bhagavata Seva? You regularly attend the Srimad Bhagavatam class. That's Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Regularly attending Srimad Bhagavatam class and serving the spiritual master, all the dirty things in the heart are destroyed almost to nil. What does it mean, almost? It means that the mode of passion goes away and the mode of ignorance goes away. And one at least becomes established in the mode of goodness. By Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. That is spiritual technology. Yeah. That's not true. That's absolutely not true. He's not a kshatriya. He's a devotee who is transcendental to the modes of nature. Because he has surrendered to Krishna completely, he is transcendental to the modes of nature. It's a big offense to say Arjuna is in the mode of passion. No, he's not in the mode of passion. He's transcendental to the modes of nature.
Okay. And is it not said that it's very difficult? Actually, you cannot do that, going from one background to the other one.
And you know that this Krishna consciousness movement is meant to take people and bring them to the transcendental position. Now they may, while they're in the process of coming to that transcendental position, act in one varna or another. But as they are all supposed to be Vaishnavas, they are expected to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. Otherwise, why call them Vaishnavas? Vaishnava means free from the influence of the modes of material nature. Transcendental to the Brahmanas, right? That's what it means. So, I mean, otherwise, why are we bothering to read Srimad Bhagavatam? Because we want to become free from the modes of material nature. The first thing that will go away will be passion. The second thing will be ignorance and passion.
But like the quality of a kshatriya, he has some qualities there, which are, you know, going fighting and all these things.
Yeah.
Which are?
You can do that for Krishna service if you're transcendental to the modes. If you're engaged in Krishna service, you can fight, you can study, you can sweep the toilets, doesn't matter. No, you don't have to be under the mode of passion. You do not become infected by the modes of material nature.
Maybe, but you have to work on this. You have to use passion to do what you're doing.
You are acting under the direction of Krishna. He says, act like this, you act like that. That way you don't become, because you're acting under Krishna's order, you're not affected by the modes of material nature. It may look like passion, may look like ignorance, it may look like whatever, but it's not. Yeah?
That phrase says that all these inequities are reduced almost to nil. Does that mean that there's always some imperfection, like the errors and things like that?
That what?
That there will still be some imperfections.
See, the imperfections are not really entirely gone until one has reached the stage of at least bhava or prema. So there may be some little imperfections.
Like that's what we say to errors.
Yeah.
Considering most of the qualities of one in goodness, how he's fixed in determination, he keeps to his vow. Passion means you're fired up for some time and then you lose your enthusiasm. So it seems like one who's fixed in his determination and goodness actually has a great advantage in terms of being a kshatriya.
One may have a certain kind of body, certain kind of mind, certain kinds of skills. You certainly lose. You can't fight a battle without getting angry, for example. Not possible. But you'll not get affected or be under the control of the modes of material nature. You'll be controlled by Krishna. He was under that battle and Krishna said, now shoot him, now shoot him, now shoot him, now shoot him. It was completely, there was no reaction. It was not fruitive. It was not fruitive.
Just like Prabhupada, he said, but it had anger, but it had nothing to do with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure.
It was controlled anger.
You could see that. Sometimes you see Prabhupada get very, very angry at somebody. Extremely angry. But then what would happen is it stopped just like that. It's just completely gone. You know, whereas a person in the material nature gets angry, and she's angry for days. Probably just turn on a dime, you know. So, anyway, there's more to discuss about that one, but we should, we could talk about that some other time. Okay, thank you very much, Lord Srila Prabhupada.